You're wrong.
Well, you know, when I first got interested in band, I must have been 8 or 9 years old. And John Philip Sousa and his band came and played in our municipal auditorium. And I wasn't in band or anything then, but I lived just a half a block from there, and I saw all the commotion go out, and I saw him and he and the band come in and the crowd greeting them and all.
Now, what year was this?
Well,
back in 28 or
well, it, yeah, along in there somewhere, about 1927 or 28.
Here in Wichita Falls?
Yeah, And I saw him come in and all the crowd around to greet him, and they all applauded and all, and I thought, well, gee, that's really nice. And I really didn't know about the band or anything, but I had that in mind, and I got to and I didn't get to go because I didn't have a ticket, I didn't have any money. But I saw him, and it really made it impressive, made me so impressive about it. And so later on, I got to think, you know, I'd really like to play in a band. And there was a municipal band called the Texans here. And Paul Sees was his name, and he was an ex-railroad man, but he played in the old bands up in the East and all. And he was the director. And so I decided, my mother, and we got a cheap trombone from the Chicago Music Company. It was one of those white trombones, and we started playing in the band. And what he did, he'd give you private lessons, and you played in this community band. And there were people about, the oldest was about 73 years old, and the youngest about 6 years old.
And now there's the white silver.
Yeah, the white silver trombone. And he gave lessons, and then he charged us for the lessons, and then we played in the band. And we'd meet every Wednesday nights in the auditorium up above where the city council met. We had rehearsal up there once a week. And it was, boy, he was strict. And we had to learn all of the scales from major and minor and things. And really, he was very determined and strict, a very small man. But anyway, we couldn't afford the lessons, so we, two of us took a lesson together, and the two of us played. It was myself and another girl. And it was good because we challenged each other, and we worked hard. And finally, as a young man, I became the first chair trombone player, and I thought that was something. And we went to a...
And what year was that?
About 30 or 31 or 29 along in there.
And what did he charge for lessons?
I think we had to pay $5. It would have been $10 maybe if I was alone, but we paid $5. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
And my first, they had national contests all over, and they were having a national contest in Waco. And we went to that as a community band. And there were only two or three bands, and we came out tops. And one of the judges was Dr. Vandercook from Vandercook College.
Wow.
And H.C. Nutt was their judging instrumentalist, solos and ensembles. And he judged me on trombone and gave me a second division. I got a medal, you know. And that's the way I got started. And finally, I went to Vandercook, you know. It was a fine training to be a band director. It sure was. But
So when did you chose that? Because you said something about not playing in the school band because you were in that community.
Yes, because the high school band director was also a tennis coach, and he and this director didn't get along, and they were, oh man, they would cuss each other out and what have you. And since I had started so early, I had to make a decision between the community band and the high school band. So I played in the high school orchestra, and I didn't want to be among all of that unhappiness and everything else and all that's going on, so I just decided I'll just play in one band and not the other. But Leon Breeden was playing about that time. You remember him?
Yes.
And he was playing in a high school band. He was a couple of years behind me, and boy, he played fine jazz. And I played in high school with all the local bands in jazz. And I started out my first job. I think I got $1.35, but that's how I learned to fake.
Yeah.
And the hard way, they'd say, "Well, you just try it," you know, that type of thing. And so
you call it fake. We call it improvisation.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Back in those days, it was just faking.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so I went to high school, and I didn't go the first year because I was trying to raise enough money to go. And one of the aldermen in town loaned me some money to go. And a friend of mine that played baritone, his father was an aldman, and he decided he was going to take us to these different colleges and see if we could get some help. So he took us around, and we went to SMU, and we got a scholarship from SMU. And they had NYA, you know, these NYA jobs where they help the young people, like working in the national parks and things.
Oh, okay.
Well, at SMU, they made an arrangement to have some of us get NYA jobs, just playing in the SMU band. And so we both got a scholarship and the NYA job. So because of this old man, I decided I'd go to school, because I had decided the dance bands it was getting more difficult, and they were dropping out. So I said, I just want to go to school and be a band director. And that's how it started.
So you went to SMU or Vandercook first?
SMU first to get a bachelor's.
Okay.
And it was mostly a jazz band, the marching band, and they played jazz. But my senior year, A. Clyde Roller came there. And I think I learned more about music from him than I'd heard the whole college. He was a fine director. You know, for a while he had he was the house director of the Houston Symphony when Stokowski would come half the time and play, and then he'd be the director the other times. And finally he was at Eastman School of Music, the ensemble there for a while. And I was in SMU for a year and a half, and then World War II came along, and for 4 years I was in the service. And when I came back, I took a lot of my courses over, like ear training and things like that. But his senior year, he did something for me that was, we used to give a concert on Thursday night with the concert band at WFAA. And one Monday morning, when we were going to get ready to have band rehearsal, he said, "Charlie, you're going to be a band director, and you've got 4 days, and here's the music we're giving a concert." And so we did, and I gave the concert. Boy, I studied every night till midnight, that type of thing, on the scores and all. And it turned out really well. And but I was smoking 2 or 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And all that, I got so nervous during the concert that all that taste came up, and I quit smoking.
Really?
And I got a phone call from Holiday High School that they'd heard the concert. And that was the first superintendent invited me to be the band director, but I turned it down. I said, "That's a little high school band. I don't want to go there." Of course, they've had some fine band programs there. And so I went to Mahia. And, of course, Mr. Mr. Maddox, Robert Maddox, was the band director there. And a couple of years later, I came. And they thought I looked like him. And, boy, they really took to me really quick.
Yeah, and then he later went to Odessa High School.
Right? Yeah, right, and then became the supervisor and all. And I stayed there a year, and my wife, we had married right after the war. She was working at the big building in Washington, D.C.
The Pentagon?
Yeah, the Pentagon for the Navy Department. It's a fine secretary. Mm-hmm. So we got the job there, and I played a few dance jobs, and she got the job being the secretary at the school. So we were making pretty good salary. And I went to college first, and all during that, she worked for the Dallas Real Estate Board and made a good salary. And, of course, I was on the GI Bill, so that worked out good, too.
Oh, yeah. Now, was that the Vandercook after you got out of the Air Force?
No, I went to SMU first.
SMU. Okay.
And then I taught 2 years before I went to Vandercook.
Okay, that's why I didn't
work on the master's. I was there a year, and I got a job at Nederlin High School, and she was secretary for the Pure Oil Company for a while, and then she got secretary at one of the elementary schools, and it so happened that I got good friends with the coach. It was what's the coach of the son was the coach of the Cowboys for a while. Oh, Bud.
He was the Houston Oilers, wasn't he?
Yeah, Houston Oilers.
Yeah,
Bud, I forget his name. But he was a high school director there, and we'd have coffee together. And I found out he could drink coffee when he had a chaw of tobacco in his mouth. But anyway, then he went on and became the Houston Oilers coach and all. He went to A&M first.
Bum Phillips.
Yeah. And from there, I went, my mother, well, they had some good bands at Needham in Texas. They really
they
did.
They still do. That's
yeah,
right.
They still, do you realize that right now we had a reunion, and it's the only school that have had 5 different Hall of Famers in the school.
My goodness.
5 different ones. And I didn't know that until later. But I think that's still the most from any one school.
So what was it like back in those early years of teaching? And that was in the 30s, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, I went to, when I went to Mahia, I didn't go to the marching contest because we had a football game that, and we had a train that we went to. It was a playoff game, mm-hmm. So I didn't go to the first marching contest. But remember Lyle Skinner?
Yes.
He took me by the hand and showed me the ropes. For example, the first year I played a contest number that was an orchestration transcription. It's the Unfinished Symphony. It was on the top list, and this was just 2A school. And you weren't supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I played it. They played it. He said we played it better than the Waco Osgoode. We got a second division.
Wow.
So he showed me the ropes and that type of thing and helped me. He was really a fine gentleman. And you remember him, don't you?
I remember the name.
Yeah.
I think I ever knew him.
And when I was at Mayo, I stayed in the house. We rented the house where Robert Maddox lived. And what's the fine trumpet player that was at North Texas that married the band director up at Illinois?
Yeah, Haney, John Haney.
John Haney. He had him as when he was in high school. I guess something happened to the family or something. And his room up there, it had trumpets and things on the ceiling, pictures and all, and we lived in that house. Of course, later on when I went to Monahan's, I knew him, and he was another gentleman that was so nice to me. And
did you have to teach other classes along with band?
No, I didn't.
Or drive a bus or anything?
No, except later I drove a bus when I was at Seymour.
Yeah.
But from Nealon, I went to Seymour because my mother had cancer. And my wife was from Seymour. And they had made a 4th division the year before, and it was in terrible shape. But luckily, we made it 2 in marching, and then we won in concert and sight reading. And we were doing so well that I got a job at Monahan's after that.
Oh, wow.
And that's where, what's the name, had such a good band later.
Oh yeah, Dan Gibbs.
Yeah, Dan Gibbs. And he was after me, the assistant took over when I left. But I was there 2 years and invited back to Seymour and gave me such a raise, I was making more than the principal.
What was your first salary at Mahia or wherever you started?
Well, it was about, at Mahia, it was, well, the salary wasn't too much, but the band parents paid the rest.
Oh.
And then when I retired, I worked out a deal where it worked out I could get that sum of it too on my retirement.
Oh, good.
And when I went to Needland, I think I was making about $2,200 or $2,300 or something like that.
I always remember those first years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I was there 6 or 7 years. And gosh, Dr. D.L. Wallace's son was there at the college, and I taught trombone there too while I was at Needland at the college. And that was Charles, you know.
At Lamar, yeah.
Yeah, Lamar. And of course I knew his father, and he helped me so much and was so nice to me. And I just met so many good people. And after I went to Seymour a couple of years, I went to Monahan's. And I met Joe Haddon and, of course, J.R. McIntyre and Gene Smith and Bill
Dean.
Dean. All of those were there and listening to those bands. And, of course, Earl Ray was my first boss when I was in SMU. My senior year, I had to take practice teaching, but I didn't take practice teaching because he hired me. He was the supervisor of music there and the junior high band director, hired me to be elementary teacher and had a band in an elementary school. And then I taught some at the junior high, and he was my first teacher.
So y'all ended up down there together. He was at Wink, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was at Wink and then at Monahan's for a while.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he, the last one that they'd made at Monahan's was his band. And about 17 years later, or something like that, I came and made the first one that they'd made in all those years.
My.
And I was so impressed because people like J.R. McIntyre came up and said, it was really a fine band. And I had been successful at all those other places, but man, that was so strong out in West Texas then. Those bands were something else.
They really were.
And I went back to Seymour and stayed for about 7 years and then came to Ryder High School. And after about 11 or 12 years, became a music band supervisor. And I retired early. But, I did clinics all up until through last year, so.
And you're only 94. I don't know why you're stopping.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll stop. I might teach one. Do one clinic, and that's all this year, if she wants me.
Yeah, well, I'll bet you the door is always open.
Yeah.
So, what changes have you seen through the years?
Well, when we first started marching, it was all 30-inch step, and we didn't even use sometimes the yard lines for the football games. And when we marched, they didn't have the yard lines at marching contest, and for a while, we had the marching band, the concert band, sight reading, and solo and ensemble all the same day, and student directors, all of it was one day, and you were a nervous wreck when you got through.
Oh, my.
And one year at Needham, we went to the marching contest, and it was a downpour, and we had the Army cadets uniform with all solid white with yellow plumes. And we got out in uniform, and it rained when we were in inspections. They had inspections and all. And when it rained, it just got yellow all over the uniforms and all. But we went ahead and marched in uniform. It was horrible. And then finally did the playing and all, and sight reading. But we had to get new uniforms. The superintendent said it's going to be black and it's going to be very conservative. So that's the way it was.
That's funny. He learned a lesson on cleaning.
Yeah, but it was. And I know when we had sight reading, there was only one sight reading judge. And back in the days, a lot of times they used the numbers that had been written for band that were older. And a lot of the people would get the music and rehearse it before. Uh-huh. And we used to have arguments back and forth at the band meetings that you've never heard about different things, about marching style, like in East Texas. Mm-hmm. They marched six to five, and that was it, or else it was rough, you know.
Right.
And we went through all of those things. And
that was the early days of TBA?
Yeah.
Now, you were one of the charter members. Tell me a little bit about the beginnings of TMEA. It's interesting.
Well, I don't remember because it was the first year. It was been going for a year or two, really. And I didn't know about it, and I didn't go the first year. Then I started the second year. Yeah. I went to TMEA, but I didn't go to TBA. And that's what I didn't learn about all this and got in trouble at all. But then, so it had been started a year or two, I'm sure, before, maybe.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It's true. The first one I went to, I believe, was at the Mineral Wells. And we stayed in a room. People would rent rooms in their homes and all. Really? And they had two hotels, but it wasn't big enough for that. And I know that Salvation Army band that was to go play, and it was in an old stadium and that type of thing. It was way back. Mm-hmm. And then finally we went to Galveston a lot, you know, and that was nice. And then to Dallas and to Fort Worth a few times. And then it was at San Antonio all the time, both TBA and TBA.
That was a good place to hash out all the early problems and kind of get us going as to where we are today.
Huh? Right.
Very important beginnings.
And Phi Beta Mu had a lot to do with that, too. And, mm-hmm. and of course, Joe Haddon and Robert Maddox and all of those from there were so much, helped me so much. But we have arguments a lot of times in those meetings, especially the ones at Neyland and the East Texas people and all.
Right.
Oh, they were actually fights almost. And I shouldn't say this, but a lot of things went on in the old times. For example, like one of the music companies on the side had a Women of the Night and that type of thing. It was, man, we really cleaned a lot of it out since it first began.
In exchange for business, huh?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I guess so. Anyway, that didn't happen but once or twice, and that was it. And when we first started, and the people knew the music stores, when you have beginning band, they would give you a stipulation when they had an instrument, but they'd tell the band parents and the school that they go, well, we didn't make much salary, so we got more salary that way by doing that. And finally, they stopped it. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
But all of that was going on, too. But it's been interesting, and I'm so glad that I did it. I wouldn't do anything else. But,
well, what was a personal highlight of your career?
Well, the biggest highlight was Hall of Fame. And the other highlight was great, but the Hall of Fame in Texas was, but the other was the Band Director of the Year.
Yeah, for 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. And it was that was outstanding, especially when you know who's in it. And someone like me got it, I know that I was just the luckiest person in the world to do that because the first one, I believe, was Gabriel.
Arnold Gabriel.
And then Bourgeois.
Right.
And I had met them when I retired. They several times, they would play in this Band of America that would take cruises. Mm-hmm. And one year, he and Bourgeois and Gabriel, both the directors, for a 21-day trip going around Europe. And in Italy, so I got well acquainted with Gabriel because on the ship he and I would play Caribbean poker together. And but Colonel Gabriel was so good, but he wasn't the friendliest type. He was kind of off, away off.
Sort of aloof.
Yeah, kind of aloof. But Bourgeois was just great and enjoyed him. But he was pretty rough on the in front of the band too. But
what would you do over if you could do something again? What would you do over?
Well, I'd do the same thing. I'd be a band director, that's for sure.
Yep.
And I grew up as an only child, a boy, and I didn't have a father. And there were three sisters that babied me like nobody, so I spawned rotten. And the best thing that ever happened to me was to marry my wife, and she straightened me out so quickly. But I learned how to really be a good band director from the old timers. And every time we'd have a convention and the good directors would come here, I'd try and attend every rehearsal and see what they did.
That's really
and I'd
important.
Go back and I'd say the band's going to be horrible, and I'd start doing some of those things and they cooperate, and the band was much better than I thought it would be.
That's really where you learn at TMEA's, going to those rehearsals.
Right, you bet. And Gabriel, Bourgeois, and all of those, I just respected them so much, and I learned so much from them. And I learned, I became a helping the student teachers and giving them grades from Midwestern and all. And there's so much they need to know, so I really enjoyed that too.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, being a mentor is one of the best things you can do.
Yeah, yeah. But it's been a fine career, and I wouldn't take anything for it.
So what advice would you give young directors just starting out?
Get all the help they can and visit the old timers. That's what we all did. And you learn a lot from college, but then you learn a lot when you finally get on the first job. You know, there are a lot of things you didn't know. And one is how to handle students. That's so important. And to be, how to get along with them, but be firm. But I learned to be rough at the rehearsal, but be a good friend, a best friend before and after the rehearsal and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And get as close as you can to your students and help them when you can. And
very, very important. What, like in today's bands, high school bands, do you see any problems developing? What warnings would you give? What do you feel about today's trends?
Well, the marching, the playing, it's different. It was, they are so fine and good, but they do it all year long, so you have to do the same thing at the ball games too, but the fans really appreciate it. But the thing I miss most, they don't show the bands on TV or anything anymore, and they're really great. Mm-hmm.
You see any problems with that? Just doing
a lot of things. They don't play marches anymore hardly, and all the modern music is. They don't do the old standards anymore, and you don't hear them. Remember when Ravelli gave a speech one time at the convention about that? You need to get the history too and everything and play some of the old transcriptions and all, and they don't do that anymore at all.
And what would you tell them the value of playing a march is?
Well, it would start out as marching band, and that's traditional for one thing, and with the armies and everything else, and just like people love marches, they really love the marches, and when we were teaching in some of our schools, they fuss because sometimes when you change over, you didn't play the marches anymore. And it's so patriotic and that type of thing, and it's just good to learn about the tradition, learn to play marches. And they don't play marches like they used to. The old the old arrangements, those clarinet parts were something else and everything. And they've kind of watered it down to where it sounds good, but it isn't really. They had to learn. They were better sight readers, I think, because of that, too. And,
right, I agree.
And they were better technicians because of that. They surely were. Mm-hmm. Weren't you there when y'all started the circles?
Yes.
Well, Buddy went to Lubbock, and he talked to you all, and he got that first circle deal you did. He got the show and the music. And we did that, and we were the first one to do that around the area here, one of the first high school bands. And boy, that started off to where you really helped us tremendously. Because we started doing variations of that, and we could do it for 2 or 3 years, different things, you know.
I think the circle drills really originated with the Casper Troopers Drum Bugle Corps.
Oh,
And then I was sitting in Dean Killian's office the day he called Jay Julian at Tennessee. They'd been on the Orange Bowl and did circles.
Uh-huh.
And Killian had done the Gator Bowl show that was nationally televised. And so they were talking about each other's shows, and they decided they'd trade drill. And
yeah.
That's where Tech got the circle drills.
Yeah.
So I'll give credit there where it was due. But
yeah.
I remember that conversation. They were bragging to each other about how great the other bands was.
Yeah.
Each other's band was. And said, well, let's just trade drills. We'd like to.
Yeah.
Because Julian liked what the Texas Tech band had done at Gator Bowl. So
yeah.
That was interesting.
Well, and by the way, my daughter and Bill Parks, my junior high band director for a long time, were going to Tech, and we wanted to so much. And Dean was so involved, he invited us to come and watch the band and speak to us, and he ignored us, and we never did see him. And our girls got discouraged, and they went to North Texas. But we wanted him originally to go there, so that's a shame.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He didn't have much help, I guess, on Saturday.
Well, that's been such a, and he just forgot, and we were just there and didn't know what to do and what have you. And I guess they decided they didn't want to go. So that was a shame. But anyway, they would have been ex-Tech band people, that's for sure. Because you had such a fine marching band, too, and they were interested in that.
So here we are, the Wichita Falls Marching Festival is tonight, and you're getting ready to go.
Yes, sir.
At the age of 94, you're going to go enjoy the bands again. That's
you bet, right. You bet.
Never miss.
That's right, that's right. And people like yourself are people that helped me, and I appreciate it so much, and you've been so nice to me. And you're younger, but you're... You helped me, and you're such a fine musician, and it's been an honor to know you too, and you've been very kind to me.
You know, Wichita Falls, I have a good connection here because J.W. King used to teach at the Midwestern.
Right, all the time. You
of course, he started June on the French horn.
Right.
Or during those camps, and you, I think, taught her some.
And we didn't have a French horn player, so they asked me to teach her some.
Right.
So I got a book out. About French horn and started learning more so I could teach her some. And
We both admire the work you've done here. Of course, Mac Bibb's the best friend of mine. And
yes, and I taught him when he was in elementary school.
Yeah, it's amazing how the family, the
right,
band family is
right,
connected and spread.
Right. And that's true. And he's still in Lubbock, isn't he?
He's at Coronado High School.
Coronado High School.
My granddaughter plays horn in his band.
How about that? That's great. That's great.
Another connection there.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, I'm lucky that I was in middle of Texas teaching. I was in eastern Texas. I was in southern Texas, really. I was in western Texas and north Texas. And I got to meet a lot of people and know so many of the good and fine band directors, and that's something else that I'm glad I did.
Absolutely. Now, who did you study with at Vandercook?
Well, H.E. Nutt and Dr. Van had retired.
Okay.
And the drummer that's so good, has a book out of all the rudiments, and...
Well, I'm slipping on that one.
Well, I just can't remember all, but they were such they were so down to earth. That little book that Vanderkook wrote was so important, and the techniques they used in all for band. Mm-hmm. When I was teaching, I went to a music school where they taught you to play your instruments well and that type of thing, SMU, and I had fine instructors. But I needed to go to a school like Vanderkook when I first started teaching and get some to how to really become a good band director.
And who was at SMU?
A. Clyde Roller.
Oh, you went through that. Yeah. That's right. Drybrook wasn't there yet, right?
No, he was coming later. However, excuse me. Let me turn that on. Hello?